corazón se queda aquí. Queda aquí. Esta es mi historia.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. This podcast is hosted by the Emerging Historians. We are part of the Dallas Mexican American Historic Week, also known as DEMAL for short. DEMAL, founded in 2008, is a nonprofit focused on researching, collecting, documenting, and preserving Mexican American history in Dallas, Texas. On this season, we will share the lived experiences of BIPOC, meaning Black, Indigenous, and people of color business owners who have been affected by COVID-19 in Dallas, and we will also hear how they are navigating these times. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy. Please like, subscribe, and share.
My name is Victoria Farrell Ortiz. I'm co-hosting this episode today with Viviana Hurtado, and our guest is Tisha Creer. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. If you would please tell us a bit about yourself.
All right. I want to thank you so much for the invitation to be a part of your podcast. This is great. My name is Tisha Creer, and I was born and raised right here in Dallas, Texas. I went off to school to New York when I graduated and got a degree in theater when I graduated from Booker T. Washington High School of Performing and Visual Arts. Since then, I came back to Dallas, and I've been doing a lot of cultural work, community building work. I had a open mic poetry spot called Reciprocity in the 90s over on Tyler Street in Oak Cliff. I worked for the City of Dallas for the Arts Arts and Culture, is called now, as a program coordinator and in the nonprofit sector, and have just opened this business, Recipe Oak Cliff, to bring some fresh food to my food desert neighborhood.
That's wonderful. Those are some things I did not know. I didn't know you used to work for the city. And
12 years, never mind.
Well, that's amazing to hear that you like dipped your hand into so many things. I do remember you saying that you were a Booker T alumni. Mm-hmm. But we are excited to have you. I love Recipe Oak Cliff, and appreciate having vegan and healthy food in my neighborhood, because, you know, that's something that's often not accessible. And also, you know, that it's owned by a Black woman such as yourself, because it's important to have businesses that you can support within our communities that are really caring for us, made by us.
Mm-hmm. Tisha, I wanted to ask you, what are some changes, both positive and negative, that you've observed in Oak Cliff that you want to talk about?
Lord. Woo! Well, it's so many things. I mean, I think that, you know, having new businesses and developing Oak Cliff is a great thing. The thing that disturbs me is that the people that have, you know, made Oak Cliff have its flavor, that draws the folks who want to come over here and, you know, open their businesses and live and things, and that flavor that they're drawn to, that those people get squashed out, and that those businesses aren't a part. Like, I'm really about, you know, business, especially, you know, the creative and cultural economy, you know, because I feel like we create a lot, our cultures create a lot, and yet we do not, you know, reap the benefits from it, the value from it, you know? And so what I don't like to see is those things getting squashed out, opposed to those things being nourished. You take Jefferson Boulevard for instance, you know? I mean, it was the place where, you know, you could go and get all your kink stuff. Now you can't, now that's all being kind of like taken away, instead of it being elevated into, you know what I'm saying, its cultural position, it's squashed, you know, and there's so many so many examples that I've observed over the years. Deep Ellum going up and down and up and down, you know, and the fact that it was once, you know, it's a historically Black neighborhood. I mean, it was the place where, when the redlining happened, that they, where people were only place where people were allowed to be. And then, you know, it was, it created that juice, but then it gets squashed instead of developed. And so those are the parts that I just don't like.
I think I agree with you. I think that I'm a true Oclipian, and I've witnessed those changes too, even before COVID. I've just seen so many changes that I just don't agree with either. I feel like so many small businesses on Jefferson particularly are losing the opportunity to provide for their families and provide not only just economically, but leave a legacy for their children. And so with that and coming to an end, it's almost like a part of their family history ends. And they have to start all over. So sometimes people live where they work. And if there's no reason to really live or work there, you have to move somewhere else for the most part. And so it's just a shame to see that a lot of these small businesses, minority-owned businesses, are not being valued, as you said, and have to close shop and figure out something else to do when they've provided so much.
And I like what you said about, you know, having to start all over again. And that is a tool in the system of oppression, you know. It's like, you know, not being able to build that generational wealth, you know, the economic competition. You know, it's like, oh, wait a minute. These folks are over here making money, you know what I mean? And living life, and that it's culturally, you know, kind of like autonomous from the dominant culture. Like, it's, they're doing their own thing and making money at it and circulating their dollars. And so those kind of things get busted up. And that's the systemic racism part, you know what I'm saying, that's mixed all in there, that really, you know, gets my goat. And
How long have you been at your space at Recipe Oak Cliff now?
So we've had Recipe Oak Cliff for 4 years. We're finishing the fourth year right now. Now, originally, Recipe Oak Cliff started out as, I started a company in I think maybe 2012, 2013, called the Susu Cultural Business Incubator. And it was because, you know, we have so many makers in our community amongst us, right? Making so many beautiful art projects and products just in general. And so it was a way for me to okay, well, let's train ourselves up a little bit more. And then let's do some pop-up markets inside of all of the vacant lots that are around that could be utilized better. So I did a vendor certification program. I got a little funding with this collaboration of sorts with BC Workshop, and we did a vendor certification program and did some pop-up markets over in 10th Street and then some in South Dallas, just vacant lots all around. And this kind of vision came to me about, you know, Ewing Avenue, because it's hard, you know, because when you think of all of this work that we have, it's so big, right? And so sometimes you're like, where do I start? Yeah. Where do I begin? Like, to where I can, I'm always looking at the fabric of it and trying to see that one thread that I can just and dismantle this whole thing, right? So I came to this, this thing came to me, really, you know, spiritually, of Ewing Avenue. It was like, why don't you focus? It's right up the street from my house. Why don't you focus right here on Ewing Avenue? There's a few abandoned buildings. This used to be a business hub. Focus here. Let's attempt to get some properties here. We will own the properties. We might not be able to get it all together as one by ourselves, but maybe we can purchase it together, then sell it to the owner, then do the next one, and create a cultural business hub that will then support and strengthen the residents that are around there, because they will have access to the goods that they need, because we're creating the things that they need, and we, you know, strengthen the whole community development part, that like that. And so it just so happened that the space that we are in, that Recipe Oak Cliff is in, was the first, well, wasn't the first space that we could find, but it was the easiest to get into because it was the newest build on the block. And so it wasn't going to require, you know, all of the hundreds of thousands, just some of the hundreds of thousands to get it renovated and up and going. And so it spoke and it said food. And so we started with food because the pop-up workshop, the pop-up markets that we were doing focused on, you know, healthy food, cultural retail, other health and wellness services, and education and literacy and performing and visual arts. Those were the kind of main tenets of our markets. So that's how we came to starting Recipe Oak Cliff and in that particular location.
Absolutely. I think it's great that you're addressing food insecurity. I think you're going to be ending food insecurity. It's possible when places like Recipe Oak Cliff are open and operating. I feel like so many people in Oak Cliff have to deal with that situation where they just can't find fresh foods, healthy foods to sustain themselves and their families. So what you're doing is definitely needed. And I just want to pivot. I wanted to talk about the moment when you heard about the city of Dallas locking down. And it became apparent that this coronavirus was more serious. And it would have an impact on your business. What were your first thoughts and how did you start navigating through that?
Well, it's been such a long journey from March, right? And I just remember in March thinking, wow, if I'm still alive, you know, in October, it's going to be a real blessing. And so I'm just really thankful, first of all, to even have made it this far and that the business is still open and that in some ways we're thriving. In some ways, you know. So I'm small staffed as it is. And so the first thing that happened was my manager, who has a young daughter who she homeschools, immediately, you know, was afraid to come in. So I was like, oh, okay. And so then I was like, well, gosh, I need to hire someone. But then I was a little concerned or very concerned about bringing in someone that I didn't know and didn't, I don't know where, who they're around or if they care about any of this, you know, protections.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was like, oh Lord, what do I do? And so I kept going as best I could. Like I
that's
kept.
You really, yeah. I mean, that's all.
Yeah. It's like, I just keep going. But it was really funny because I had some moments in April, especially like where I would go in there and try to get ready. And literally I was walking in circles like a mouse in a thing. I was just walking in circles. Like, it's like my brain was like overload, you know. And then trying to keep the space clean and trying to, and so I said, okay, stop for just a second. So I took a couple of days and, you know, just prayed and meditated and took some deep breaths and thought about what I could do physically with my own personal body as far as Recipe is concerned, and then how I could be of service. Because, you know, I am a property owner, a business owner in the middle of this space. How can I be of service? You know, what can I do? And so I support a couple of vegan chefs. I try to support as many as I can. I don't do the best job, but it blame my head and not my heart. But I try to support a couple of chefs who are at the farmer's market, you know, helping them with in different ways. And so I reached out to them to say, hey, if you want, I know the market, farmers market is closed, but we're still open. We are considered an essential business. Recipe is even listed as a grocer as well. And so we can still be open. And if y'all want to come and serve, you can. And so one of the groups took me up on that. It was Vegan Vibrations. And so, you know, we've been collaborating and they've been able to serve their food on the weekends and then, you know, put some money in, you know, on the rent and bills. And I shortened my hours, you know, to something that I feel like I could manage no matter who was there. And was blessed with a couple of things with some other chefs that I knew that had some, like Chef Cynthia from Soul Good, who hooked me up with some contracts with Feed the Front Line and was able to like do some things with Feeding the Front Line and Ignite Arts with SMU and Clyde gave some funding, and also the Embry Foundation put in some money, and we were able to like give some free meals to senior citizens there for a nice chunk of time, all the way probably up until June. And so yeah, that's where we've been this far, collaborating with Vegan Vibrations, trying to do as much outreach things as we can, shorten our hours. And I've been working on building a new team, just hired this really dynamic sister from Detroit, vegan chef, and have another sister helping me or working as well, and looking at pivoting some more, even again, because it's about to be winter, and so it's a whole nother dynamic. So really looking at how we're going to move into the next 3 months, like how we're gonna, what we're gonna do, and have some great ideas for that.
That's great to hear. Could you share your hours of operation now that they're different, so that way listeners can know?
Yeah, right now we're just open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 12 noon to 5 p.m. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, Vegan Vibrations does their pop-up from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. And then if people want special things like meal plans or juice in the other hours, they can always send us an email and we will prepare those things for them as well.
Okay. Something that you said earlier so that really like stuck out to me was you talking about like your meditation work, and I myself have just started meditating, and so I wanted to ask how your spirituality influences your vision for your business.
It influences every single aspect of my business and of my life. I think that being in connection with spirit and our ancestors as guides is just really vital for me. So it influences everything. I always take a moment to sit and listen so that I can know what to do.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think especially right now, the Latinx Hispanic community is celebrating Dia de los Muertos, and so that's something that's been on my heart especially lately, and it is in my mind typically, you know, our ancestors, our foreparents, and all the sacrifices that they had to give for us to be here in our present, and so I just love hearing that. But Viviana,
indeed,
do you want
to? I'm speechless because I just really felt what you said. I feel like it's so important that we acknowledge our ancestors. So many times we forget that they're still there. We need to bring them into the conversation because they want to help as much as we need their help.
Yes.
So I think that's amazing that you are centering yourself around that kind of energy, especially now. God knows we need it. But I wanted to ask you, what was your experience with the city of Dallas? Do you think they helped address some of your challenges during the pandemic, or even the federal government at that?
I did not receive any loans. I did not receive any PPPs. I didn't do that. I did apply for a grant that was a part of the city and the DEC network, and I didn't quite receive what I thought I was going to receive, but I did receive a little piece of change that I don't take for granted, and that was helpful. I received some funding from some other national contacts that I have. Support, like I said, with SMU Ignite Arts in the Culture Bank that I'm a part of, which is a part of the Yerba Buena Culture Arts in out in Cali. And yeah, that's where I, you know, got the majority of my support and funding. I guess my expectation with the city wasn't that high for it to be that much support. So I don't feel any way about it, you know. I'm glad that we're still there, and I'm glad that we're a beacon to be there for our council person and for other people to say that we're there. But, you know, some real live support would be really great, because it's like, you know, we're keeping we're the first responders too, you know, like we're keeping it bubbling. One of the business owners up the street who owns the Chicken Shack, the Faze place, you know, it's a really dynamic story. That was his mother's space. His 90-year-old mother, it was in part of his family space, I should say, that they ran a business out of there long ago. When I came and opened up down there, he decided to open back up his space and did a nice little reno and things like that. And so he's been in business too, but, you know, he's thinking about closing, you know. He's just thinking about closing. And so it would be great for him, you know, people like that to just have a little bit of support, because we're sitting there, you know, being open no matter what, you know, trying to hold onto our land, trying to serve the people, you know. So, yeah.
I believe mm-hmm. it. I recently read that the reality is about 41% of Black businesses are closing down. And so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't cross my mind that some people are just saying, you know, I just can't handle the stress. I can't handle the financial stress. I don't really know what I'm doing right now, because I personally don't feel like the city and the federal government have really helped local businesses to survive. Because like you said, you guys are giving so much right now. In terms of even employment, I know a lot of business owners are asking people, I need people to help because my previous employers can't work right now, because they have elderly family members and they just can't work right now. So I agree, I understand completely, and I just hope that you had a better experience, and it's a shame that you didn't.
I mean, gosh, I just, you know, but I can't complain, because I have to say, like, the people have been coming through, like, they're coming through, and, you know, and people want fresh juice, and people want fresh food, and the demand is actually quite high, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so it's just a matter of keeping up with that demand, you know, and then, like you say, and having people, because, like, my dad, he's 85, my mom is 80, you know, and I'm coming home to them because we decided to all just be in the same space. And so sometimes there were times in there where I was like, I just want to shelter in place. Really, I do, you know. But the people have come through, and I'm thankful.
That's wonderful to hear. Could you share any stories? Because I know I could imagine maybe there are some naysayers whenever you first opened your doors. Like, people in this neighborhood specifically probably won't like want this kind of food. It's healthy. It's not like what they're used to. Can you speak to some of that you might've heard, and then also talk about the support that you've really felt from your community?
Yeah. I mean, of course, you know, we were saying we were opening the juice bar. People said, you know, who's going to come, what demographic is going to come over here for juice? I said, well, first of all, we don't have to have someone come over here. We want juice right here. And I live here and I'm hungry. So that proves that. And then I thought maybe doing the pop-up markets would kind of show, you know, prove the viability so that people would, you know, have a better time digesting it. But no. And then it's just almost too, like, it's so funny the way oppression works, like, even in our language and thoughts. Because, like, you know, juice, like, when you think about when you go up and down, you see that having juice and fresh food and stuff like that is actually, like, a part of our culture. You know, you look at, like, all the... how do you call it? Like the paleta, like the ice cream.
It's very native to our culture. It's very
native. Yeah, come on. Yeah, that's what we do. I'm saying we having a fruit cup cut up. We having a, you know what I'm saying? We having this like that. This is what we do. You know, we having our waters, our agua frescas. We're having that. We're having a, yeah, so that's a part of it. So now if we do but that's there, right? And so, but if we do that, it's seen like one thing. But if another person from outside the community comes and does it, it's like, oh, they opened it. It's like, no, we do that. This is what we do. So yeah, anyway, yeah, there were a lot of naysayers, a lot of people who were like, well, who's going to do this? And then, so it was just like, we just throw that to the side because you know what you need. You know what your people need. You know what you want. And you know what your people want. So you just put it there and get it there. And now we do take it up a notch. You know what I'm saying? Because I am, you know, I haven't eaten meat since I was 14. I'm about to be 50. And so I was weird. Yeah. And, but you know, but that's just how I came up. And so since then, I've just always spent time with everybody's grandmama, you know, cooking and laughing and learning in the kitchen. And so, and I, like I said, when I moved to New York, it was like, there was the whole entire world at my fingertips, at my doorstep, you know? And so I just learned so much about everything. And I definitely learned so much about food. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, making those connections to like our indigenous foods and our cultural foods in its healthiest forms is a big part of what we're doing at Recipe as well. Telling those stories, talking about hibiscus and how it's called Jamaica or sorrel or bisop or zobo or kirkadai, depending on where you are on the planet. Everybody's sitting up here brewing these flowers. You know, so, you know, making those connections is a big part of it as well. And so the people love it because you get to come in and you get to see yourself and enjoy.
That's amazing. You're decolonizing our diet, basically.
That's it.
Oak Cliffs, you are Oak Cliffs hero, basically. That's what you are.
Basically,
listen, if I am, I'm clearly amongst so many because we have so many beautiful, dynamic people here, and all over the planet. But so many beautiful and dynamic people here, and you know what, y'all out there that are listening, and these two beautiful young sisters that I'm sitting here and being blessed to spend time with right now. It's like we just keep our heads up, keep. It's not about necessarily being strong like that, you know. But it's like, just keep your head in it, you know, keep breathing and listening and tapping back into that spark that was ignited in you, that allowed you to see the visions that you see for our world, for our neighborhoods, for our planet, for our families, for our health, for our mental, for our spiritual, like, keep seeing it and stepping towards it. Don't let go, because this whole thing can look completely different, and it can be completely different. There's perceived power, and then there's real power, and we have the power.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I love hearing these words from you, Tisha. I mean, when people like yourself come and pave a way and are an example of leadership, you know, it's easy to like follow that model. Yeah, of course. I am really excited to visit your storefront in the next few days when you guys are open, probably on Thursday, and I'm already got my eye on some green pockets.
Okay, all right, that's a good one, a raw live meal.
Me too. Yeah. I'll be there too, don't worry, I'll be there.
Come through.
I just wanted to say, do you mind sharing your social media handles with our audience, just in case they want to connect over Twitter or Instagram, see more of those beautiful pictures of your food and your juices, and get more familiar with Recipe Oak Cliff?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook and Instagram. I'm gonna have to, you know, get there on the Twitter, but yeah, so we're Recipe O'Cliff or Recipe OC at Recipe OC.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. We have enjoyed the blessing, the true blessing of your time. And what a marvel it is to see the work that you're doing. Getting to like highlight those things, like you're talking about, like Jamaica, like it's there already and it was there before colonization, but also getting to recode people to truly enjoy what nourishes them, what nourishes their soul. That's a beautiful story, and I'm really excited to have had you and shared space with you.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank y'all so much. And I just want to say, just in closing, that I just love this emerging historians situation. That mm-hmm. is so powerful. Gosh, and I was telling you that when we talked earlier, but to be an emerging historian and to carry on the stories and the history, our cultural history of this town is so valuable. So thank y'all for doing that, and continue blessings to both of you and all of you and everything that you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I love sharing space with you and hearing the affirmations. It's been a blessing. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This episode was hosted by Victoria Farrell Ortiz and Viviana Hurtado. Original music was by Veronica Valera. She was a co-composer and provided vocals. Andrew Jackson played trumpet and was a sound editor. Autumn Graves was the composer, played guitar, and was lead vocals.
If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends, family, pelotero, everybody. Only you can prevent your history from being forgotten. That is on you. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Damahl Official. That's D-M-A-H-L Official. And like us on Facebook, leave a review, and stay safe out there. Hasta pronto. La bajada.